Hello, everyone, and welcome to Pony Sync for May 26th, 2020. My name is Andrew Turley. If everybody could introduce themselves.
Hi, I'm Sean Allen.
I'm Joe McElvey.
Hi, I'm Theo Butler.
I'm Gord Tischer.
I'm Sylvan Klebsch.
All right. Welcome, everybody who's here in person and everybody else who's listening online at a later time. So let's dive into things. We're going to start where we usually start, with RFCs for PRs. If anybody wants to follow along, the issues that we're going to discuss are posted in the Sync channel under the 5-26-2020 topic, so you can go there to see the list of stuff.
When you do this, by the way, Andy, nothing changed with 158. We can skip that one. The changes that is picking up were me using it to test out a GitHub action, which is only on that repo.
Okay. When I inevitably forget that, you can remind me in a few minutes. Okay. So let's start with PR 174, that is add RFC for assign params syntax.
You should start with 173 instead, because 174 assumes that 173 will be accepted rather arrogantly. After.
Nice.
You're literally
note that I
people.
Don't assume 173 will be accepted, but PR 174 assumes that PR 173 will be accepted.
Arrogant damn PR.
All right. In the interest of maintaining...
Oh, yes.
Time sequencing.
This is the one I asked you if you would go ahead and open now.
173, add RFC for explicit self-member access.
Yeah, so this has been discussed on this call, or not today's call, but previous iterations of Pony Sync call a little bit, and I've kind of stated my sort of thoughts on it to varying agreement. The core gist of it is that there would no longer be any more implicit this dot, and we would replace that with something else that is convenient but not implicit.
So we also change all FFI syntax.
Well, yes, there's that. So that would be R175. If we choose the... If people like using the syntax that I chose in this RFC, then yes, changing FFI syntax would be the thing that needs to happen.
When I asked Joe to open an RFC around this, it was, I would say, ignore the whatever the particular syntax is, Sylvan, right?
Yeah.
Because the conversation I really want to have, and I want to make sure we have as part of this, is... something which has popped up numerous times for different RFCs and different conversations that we've had of particularly around shadowing and parameters, right? And a lot of the things that we've discussed around this are basically, it's like right now fields and local variables effectively live in the same namespace, right? Like there's that implicit this and a conversation of do we want fields basically to have to be specifically addressed as fields and basically breaking them into a separate namespace, right? So yeah. You could have a field which is foo and you could have a parameter which is foo.
Yep. So alternative one on this, I think, to my mind, is much more preferable. And the thing that if this were the route that people wanted to take because of namespacing stuff, the thing that I would combine with it is actually to change from an implicit this in a signature to an explicit this in a signature, such that we pull the reference capability out from, for example, fun ref greet, and it becomes fun greet this main ref. Or even shorten it to this ref. And then you allow access only through this dot. And we could even go so far as to allowing people to pick the name for this in that context. And that lets you do interesting things like trivially capture this in a lambda, because you just give the this for the lambda itself a separate name in the lambda. It also lets you do things like express any complicated type annotation over this, and in the same way you'd express a type annotation over any other parameter, that kind of stuff. Don't get me wrong, still open questions about whether explicit is a good idea or not, but my preference would be to combine those changes into one bigger thing rather than add essentially a glyph, right?
I didn't follow what the bigger thing was. Can you maybe put that either in a comment on the RFC or here in the chat?
Yeah.
Sure. You said the words, but I couldn't put together what it was that you were saying. There was a this and then a ref for something or other.
It's just about explicit this in the signature, in addition to explicit this in the reference.
Oh, so you're saying it would be fun space this dot ref.
No, it would be like the first parameter is your receiver.
Oh, you mean that thing that makes me want to pull my hair out with Python?
No, I mean that thing that makes self and Java 9 so good.
Rust does which this as well.
Maybe I don't understand the thing.
It's the same thing. It's just that I have it's my different take on it that makes me like it, because coming from a different context, because I don't write much Python, it doesn't really get to me in Python. I mean, it's okay in Python. I don't particularly like it or dislike it in Python. But for example, in Rust or Self, I really quite like it. But yeah,
so that comment. So the first parameter would always be the this.
Yes, and then the receiver capability would be moved to that parameter rather than being, you know, fun ref or fun box or some implicit thing.
Right.
And then you can would we also get rid of the for fun box, would that always become like my class hash read instead of box?
I don't know why it would. It doesn't. You can have a box for other parameters as well.
Yeah, to me it's strange to treat the, when it comes to the implicit, like not implicit, the specialization that we do in the type system to expand fun box to fun ref, fun box, and fun val under the hood, that would only happen for that particular parameter and not others. Like, so we're sort of pretending to treat the receiver the same as the other parameters, but it's still not. Feels weird to me.
Okay. Well, I think syntactically it would be obvious that it's not treated the same, since my expectation would be that you wouldn't have to specify the type. You would just say, you know, this or self or whatever, and then the capability, but not the type.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's also the fact that you don't actually pass it as an argument because you're using it as the selector. There's a bunch of stuff that is different. So I'm not saying it's like amazingly consistent. It's just another way to express type annotations over the receiver.
Well, I think it would actually clean up a lot of confusion that I see with newcomers, both around lambda syntax for actually expressing what the capability of the receiver is, and also less common but still very prevalent confusion about, what the implicit capability of a function is, and like how that, you know, ties into the receiver.
Do you mean like the confusion where people have where they type fun and then name of their function, not really realizing in the beginning that that's box or what that even signifies? Were you talking about something else? Okay.
Yeah. That was the second point.
Yeah, I mean, I'll say in general regarding Sylvan's suggestion, I'm not really a fan. For the main reason that you're adding extra reading and writing, like boilerplate for, I don't know, more characters for the same intention. I'm more in the favor of reducing wherever we can, but I know that that is not a universally recognized universal good. So yeah.
Well, so we're having this conversation right now, where we're discussing if this was accepted, what then would the explicit thing look like as well, and possible other changes. Is it like the at sign that Joe would be interested in? Is it this larger, other large change that Sylvan has said? How do people feel about the idea of basically taking fields and putting them in a separate namespace from local variables?
I would say fields and functions is where my head's at right now. So all members of the type, just to be clear.
So they would still, so you would, a local would not be able to shadow. So I would be calling, anytime I call a function as well, I would be using the receiver, whatever receiver thing that we select, we would use that for calling functions and fields, right? Anything that's on the object.
Yeah, that's how the RFC is currently written, and that's kind of what I'm in favor of, is that the implicit this dot would go away entirely in every case where you implicitly use it now.
Definitely gets more verbose, but I don't know, from some other folks, what are your thoughts on that as a change? Just the basic thing before getting into the particulars of what it might look like.
I am personally fine with the extra verbosity. But yeah, I don't find it aesthetically unpleasing, but I know many people probably feel differently.
Yeah, it's interesting in terms of how other languages have chosen to go about this. TypeScript has moved towards explicit this, and they have a mode that requires explicit this. Rust has explicit self, which is equivalent to explicit this. It's the same thing. I think it's Java 9 that enables explicit this, so that you can add type annotations to this, but doesn't require it. To be honest, I think I'm a bit torn. I think, for verbosity argument, I think for me is kind of rough, because at that point I would just say, well, just don't do this. And that gets rid of any kind of verbosity, right? You have direct access.
Well, I think, go ahead, finish your point.
On the other hand, I think the advantages of having these things be in separate namespace are really there. Like, I really do buy that.
Yeah, the part where the current state brings us, what I'm getting at is that limiting the verbosity of this change to just like one character added to an identifier is like kind of my ideal state, because currently
to me it's glyphs, and it's the cognitive load that glyphs bring with it. Nobody knows what a glyph means until they get used to it. It's not actually an affordance, right?
This glyph, so. One of the arguments I make about this using at for this versus basically what I want to do with FFI is take away the glyph for FFI, and have it be, have FFI, this is getting into an RFC that I haven't written yet, but yeah, have FFI be like, you define an FFI type like you would define a primitive. It's sort of like a mixture between a primitive and a trait. Like, it has no state, and you can access it like you access a primitive, right? There's the construct in pony terms, the constructor is like statically done. You don't specify a function body, you just specify the function head. And so you specify like FFI methods that way. Like, so you'd say, like, here's my FFI module called libc, and here's the functions in libc that I use. And to call one of those functions, I call libc.printf, for example.
Right, so you eliminate FFI without forward declaration.
Which would be possibly considered a drawback, possibly an advantage from any perspective.
I would consider that an advantage, but.
Oh, really? Wow, I don't think so. I think for me, that's definitely a disadvantage. But
so coming back to the argument that I'm making here is that the at glyph that we use right now is for FFI, and the number of people who need to use FFI while using Pony is hopefully rather small for the most part. Yep. And whereas this would be, so you see that glyph and you're like, wow, I've never seen this before. What does this do? Whereas this other usage of at, the at symbol would be like, you would see it in pretty much every method. And you would, it's not something that would be obscure to you for more than like a few seconds of learning the language. It's not going to be one of those obscure ones that only pops up rarely and you have to go look it up. It's like, this is used everywhere. And so it becomes quickly learned and not, occult.
Hello?
Yep.
I said okay. The word occult and everyone goes silent. Anyway, okay. That's my perspective, is that if we're going to use glyphs, we should use them for things that are very common so people know and remember what the glyphs are, and you know, remove them for things that are less common, like FFI.
I think that's interesting. It's very much the opposite to how I would think about syntax design. That's interesting.
Yeah, but it does make sense. And I'm not sure which one I would prefer. I think they both seem like improvements. Like in order to refer to anything that's either a field or a function on a type, you would use the at symbol, or alternatively having an explicit parameter, this or self, that has a capability attached to it. Both seem like improvements to me.
And just while we were mentioning languages that have explicit this, I'll mention CoffeeScript, because CoffeeScript is my inspiration for using the at symbol in this way.
Cool. Okay, I'm no longer in favor of the thing.
Pariah for some people, for language syntax, but some aspects of it are elegant, including this one.
Didn't CoffeeScript take that from Ruby, or am I mistaken there?
But the way Ruby uses it is actually closer to what you were picturing, Sean, which that it's only used for fields.
Oh, okay. I see.
CoffeeScript uses it for any time you are doing something to the this.
What is the advantage of breaking up the namespaces?
So the one I talk about here is that in the current state, you end up with these kind of painful refactors when you, let's say you used to be let's say you're a wrapper class that wraps another wraps another class inside of it and maybe does some other things on top of it, when you're instantiating in your constructor, you construct the inner class and you pass parameters into it, and some of those parameters, it makes sense for those parameters to have like the same names that the inner class's field has, and it works. But if you were suddenly to become not a wrapper class, you would have to change the parameter names. There's lots of other places where this comes up, like where you go from having like a private field to a public field, that it becomes a problem, right? If you have an underscored private field, there's no conflict with local or parameter names because underscores are always allowed on fields and methods, but not local variables. So at least with that restriction in place, there's not a problem because you can use the name of the parameter without the underscore and then assign it to the underscored field. But if you were to ever make that field public, now you also have to change the parameter names. And usually this is done by adding a prime, but even adding a prime breaks any callers who are using named arguments to talk to you. So in some cases, it might be not only a refactor for you, but also a refactor for users of your library, even if you kept the same or compatible interface in every other sense. So that's another, people like me and probably others adopt this sort of defensive mode of always appending primes to parameter names because you don't know if you're going to have to use it as a field or a method name later. I don't know that everyone has that level of response to it, but yeah, I tend to make any time that I think this could be a field or method name, I always add a prime to it, even if I don't have to because I'm scared.
I think Carl approached things in a somewhat similar fashion, at least for a while. And the reason why I asked you over the weekend if you could write something up around this was because I've been working in the Corral code base and I was noticing this, and I was like, you know, we've had conversations which touch on this a lot in various different ways, and I think it would be good to make a decision one way or another of whether we want to separate these things out or not. Right. And like, you know, the seeing code, which was written apparently in with the similar sort of, you know, thing where you add primes because you're not sure, right, what it would be in the future, you know, led me to thinking about that. It's going to be weird coming for me seeing how I'm pretty much always in favor of things being explicit, but I do kind of like the implicit this and the trouble that comes along with it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm personally not a big fan of explicitly adding like this as a name to the parameter signature. I can see the appeal, but to me, that's getting like a little bit too explicit. So everyone has their threshold.
Gordon, we haven't heard from you. What do you think?
I'm afraid I have no strong opinions. I'm sorry.
It's okay to be the person who has no strong opinions. That's all right.
Although I have commented on this with a couple things, I'm afraid I also have a strong opinion. I guess, that's not true. I guess I'm on two ends of it, is that I think I would prefer either leaving it the way it is or going with explicit this as opposed to introducing a glyph for it. The glyph for it feels wrong. I don't know how to say it any nicer than that. I'm sorry.
You don't have to apologize, Sylvan.
It feels Perl-ish, and I know I've said the dirty Perl word.
I like Perl.
Fair enough. But everyone's got their faults.
But Perl uses it extensively. My hesitation with like the at sign is that it just seems kind of out of place-ish. But that's me.
I also personally I lean towards the idea of having to explicit this because it's consistent with having named imports as well for like accessing different namespaces.
On the other hand, imports allow you to leave off the name exactly such that you can not have a wart in front of things and go ahead and pollute your namespace. And that's sort of the same argument as the implicit this. I'm not saying it's good or consistent.
Well, I mean against having the at symbol.
Yeah, I understand that. I'm arguing against myself here.
Yeah.
Where it's, you know, imports sort of do the exact same thing. A use statement intentionally lets you leave off any leading wart so that you, and I don't know, maybe the end result of explicit this is you say, oh, well, now you have to name all your imports, and then that seems hard too.
I mean, I have opinions about this that you may not like.
You want to name all the imports? Do you want to name all the imports?
He wants to name all the imports. That's clearly what he was saying. Don't make him say it.
Yes.
Okay, that's fine. You're right.
I mean, well, I don't want to, but I'm saying this is something that I do sometimes.
I want filtered imports,
I'm perfectly fine with people not naming their imports, but I also would not be against it.
Yeah.
I'll say this. I am far from being ready to even possibly consider voting or anything on this. I mostly wanted to get it open so that I could hear what other people would say pro or con towards things and think about it some more and have a explicit start an explicit conversation about this rather than being it being tangential to a number of other conversations we've had.
And along those same lines, I'm in no rush to, I'll be clear about this part too, is that I'm in no rush to go out and try to get this RFC merged and then implement it in Pony C. Because to be frank, what's presented in this RFC and also the other one that we can discuss or not discuss today is, stuff that I've done in the Mare compiler and the Mare language that kind of diverges from the Pony language, in this aesthetic way that we've been talking about, while keeping the same or roughly the same semantics. If everyone was like super excited about this and we got this, merged tomorrow or whatever, the final comment period, whatever, I would not be jumping on, trying to get this implemented in Pony C. This is sort of like, I opened it because John wanted to talk about it, and I wanted to kind of present my thoughts and why I did this.
I think it's a good subject. So far. Yeah, I think it's a really good subject.
Okay. This seems like a. What's the takeaway here then? What do we want to do as next steps on this?
I think the next step is to bring it up next week and just chat about it again.
Okay. Sounds good. Just leave a note to that effect.
While you're leaving those notes, I can briefly mention what's going on in 174. So 174 is more syntax sugar, but no new glyphs. So there's that going for it. Anyway, the idea is to make it so that you could specify a field to target in a position where the signature where you're defining parameters. So rather than defining a parameter with a name and then within the body assigning it to the field, you could just specify the parameter. Specify the field itself that you want to target, and the type would be taken from the type of the field. Although there's a little bit of wrinkle that's mentioned with regard to sendability for functions that need all sendable arguments. So there's that, but the type would be derived from the type of the field, and then implicitly you get consume the anonymous parameter and assign it to the field at the beginning of the function body. The goal of this is trying to make it more succinct to create basic sort of data style classes where in those cases where, and I know this is not every case by far, but in those cases where your constructor is just stuffing parameters into fields, it becomes easier. You can mix and match if you have some parameters that are not going straight into fields.
Yeah, I mean, I've been recently written some code that had a bunch of objects like this. I can get behind an idea like this. Any other comments?
If we did this in combination with explicit this, we could allow parameters in constructors that have the same name to have this same approach without needing the at sign, and it would parse just fine.
Yeah, you don't technically need the at sign for this. It might make things like, yeah, some kind of explicit indicator is probably nice, but yeah, this is just, I wrote it up using the syntax of the at sign, but without necessarily having to be required.
So there's a few languages that use a similar approach, not exactly like this, where like Scala and F sharp, where the constructor defines the variables as well as the arguments. And this is more that the constructor mirrors the variables and then there's an implicit assign. I like this approach better because it allows one of the key features of Pony, which is multiple different constructors, multiple named constructors, which neither F sharp nor Scala support when you do this kind of stuff. Bizarrely,
it doesn't have to be a constructor, strictly speaking. You could have like a setter method that was.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Nothing specific to being constructor. That's a really good point. And even the code gen for this is straightforward, which is you just take those, and those are your implicit assignments at the beginning of the method. The type checking is straightforward. I don't think it needs anything from the at syntax. Funnily enough, it makes me like the at syntax even less. I don't know why. but the core behind it, yeah, I can see this. It's the usual balance, I think, of is this convenience worth the overhead for someone coming in and going, what the hell does that mean? You know, it just says, name there. Why does it say name there? And then they never use it. What's going on? I don't have the answer to that.
That's one reason why I think it does need some kind of explicit leading token. Like, for example, if you were to have explicit this as a parameter, like you were talking about in the last RFC, then I would hope that this has, like, this dot in the parameter position instead of just the name of the field. So that way it becomes clear that you are referencing the field of this.
I don't know. I honestly don't know. I don't know what would make that clear to folks. Or even if it's a problem in the first place. I just don't know.
Sean, Theo, Gordon. I should name so many people at once. Sean?
My initial reaction is, and I need to think about it more. That's my initial one. But that shouldn't be a surprise given how much I like things to be explicit, and that's, when I think about that, I start to wonder is like, so can I have a method body for this, right? Can I assign some things to fields via this and then not with others? And what is the cognitive load of this as a reader become? Because now I have to look at what's in this. I have to look in what's in the signature to see what some of the things are that's happening for what's inside the body, which is frankly kind of weird, I think, in a lot of ways for how I normally read code. So
there is an example of that on line 68. Straight on line 68 of mixing and matching.
Let's see, is there mixing and line 68, mixing and matching?
You're asking, can I have a method body? Can I assign some parameters to fields and not others?
Dear God, that the thing on line 68 is exactly what I'm like. I don't want to deal with code that looks like that. Like, that terrifies me. Like, I'm having a hard time right now being able to pull apart what happens. So that's my initial reaction. Is oh God, I don't want to deal with code that looks like the stuff that's on 68 that starts on line 68. What actually really is, you know, the create on 76.
Yeah.
But I'm also somebody who, when people complain that Java is too verbose, I'm like, I don't know. I mean, maybe, but it's also always, you know, it's pretty darn clear to me what it's doing. So, you know. There, I publicly said a nice thing about Java.
Well done.
So do people have other topics you want to talk about?
Okay.
I do have a topic I want to cover before we get to the end. But Andy, I'll let you decide when that is.
Let's try to get through the RFCs here, and then we can.
Okay.
Because I think we've got 161 add maybe to iter tools.
Yes. Yeah, there have been no comments on that one since we put it into final comment period. I think we follow our normal protocol and put it into ready for final vote, and then it gets voted on next week.
Sounds good. Any objections to changing that status? Okay, I'll move it to ready to vote.
By the way, I think at some point related to that, we might want to consider changing our policy. We used to do the syncs towards the end of the week. So all of this stuff gets announced in Last Week in Pony, which might be the only place where people see about it. And so now at this point, stuff ends up going into Last Week in Pony on Sunday, and we loop back around again on Tuesday, just 2 days, like 48 hours after some people might encounter it. I don't think that's a big problem now, but it's something we should consider in the future.
I guess there are other.
We used to have.
I don't know if last week...
when we came up.
I'm sorry.
I was going to say when we came up with all of this. This meeting was on Thursday, and so there was more time from when somebody might read a Last Week in Pony with the RFC stuff in it.
Yeah, I guess I'm just wondering how many people for how many people the Last Week in Pony announcement.
That's what I'm
keep track of this.
I don't think very many right now. That's why I was saying we don't have to worry about it right now. But it's something that has occurred to me.
Okay.
Yeah, it's also important to note that the sync meeting times are likely to change at some point in the future as well.
Yeah, I'll just also add that I think we used to vote on something like right after the final comment period ended. And so we've already sort of added this extra week of like it being in the ready for vote status, but not voting on it for a week. So maybe that's just more final comment time.
Let's keep that in mind as an issue that we can deal with, because I think there's a few things happening there. And yeah, I don't think it's a huge issue right now.
Theo, you should go look at the Last Week in Pony issue right now, because an awesome thing happened.
I saw the bot doing its work, and I thought someone had accidentally hit the merge button. I was like, what's happening here?
No, because now there's an issue on Last Week in Pony.
I was surprised.
The bot did its thing that I added. The bot for the change in of either of those
the bot
statuses.
doesn't do the thing after it gets merged, does it?
No, that I have not worked on that yet.
All right. Well, before you move to Boston, right? That's the deadline.
How rough.
I'll try to get there. A few things came up.
That's fine.
We might have to delay the vote on this for a while. So that I can keep my promise.
I don't think that has anything to do.
Yes, it does. I said it would be done before, so you would never need to do another one. which means we might not, which means, we might have to delay the vote.
All right, let's move on.
Moving on.
This is Sean level problem solving.
Okay. We're skipping 158 because Sean, you said that.
The bot which added the issue to last week in Pony. I tested it on that other one.
Yep. Okay. Let's just do the RFC issues real, if we can. Sean, you said you had something you wanted to bring up.
Yes.
Let's do that, and then we can tackle a few more things if there's time after.
Okay. So I'm working on the automated release note stuff, and there is one bot which, when a changelog tag gets added to an issue, will prompt you to add release notes. The idea being that we only have done release notes for things which are in the changelog, which are public facing. And this makes sense to me. Why would you, if it's not worthy of going in the changelog, I don't think it's worthy of having release notes. At least that's been my idea. However, if for whatever reason a commit was to be merged that had no label for a changelog thing, but did have release notes, the release notes attached to it, what should we do? Should we just throw away those release notes, delete them? Should we add them anyway, even though the thing's not in the changelog? I don't know what the right thing to do is there.
I would say they probably shouldn't get added because that seems like it would be more like, it's more likely that that would be a mistake given that it doesn't have a change to the change log.
Yeah, maybe just delete it and leave a, since it's in Git history, so it's not like gone forever. And then leave a comment saying, that's too much scope, but if the changelog bot could leave a comment saying, I deleted the release notes file because there was no changelog.
And put that on the PR that's been merged.
Yeah,
okay.
That sounds good.
That's a bit more work, but it's certainly doable. Okay. Yeah. That came up where I was looking at it. I was like, I don't know what the right thing to do is in this scenario. I have zero idea. I need to talk to people and see what they think we should do. All right, that was it, Andy.
Okay. I don't really have anything to contribute there. All right, let's take a look at the issues in RFCs. We've got 146 reference consumption and field extraction. What's going on here?
Issues 146, mm-hmm. You said?
Yeah.
Looking.
Wow, when did Eric open this?
A while ago.
I think this is one of the ones that was moved.
So the reason why this is showing up, Andy, is because we don't have a needs discussion at sync label anymore. And that was deleted yesterday by me.
I see that. I was misreading the thing at the end. I thought anyway.
So a number of these might, a few of these things that might pop up in US might be that.
Looks like maybe all of them, because 107 is the same thing.
I would expect all of them.
And yeah, 104 is the same thing. Okay, sounds good. All right, let's take a look at the Pony C stuff. So there are four issues here. 3568, ref is not a subcap of read. Read parameter reification during type checking.
Well, that's exciting.
Yeah, I looked at this in the Zulip, and I left a comment there saying that something is my comment was basically, it's true that ref is not a subcap of read, but like it's within the the constraint of read, but it's not strictly speaking a subtype of read, but it shouldn't, the compiler shouldn't actually be checking ref as a subtype of read in this case. I think something's going wrong with, you know, how I, you know, we, how we, for a fun box, we reify as ref and box and val. I think that that's
Wait a minute.
Getting passed through to the reification of the MyMap object that was a field within the class.
MyMap. What the hell is...
You have to go through to the Zulip or to the opponent of the playground.
That whole thing just looks weird. Why isn't that this list item?
Sorry, which part?
Well, my map is a map, right? Which is a map ref. They didn't, because he didn't say. And that's a fun box get item, which means that that's a...
Oh, my. Oh, I didn't know.
Well, so for a, go ahead.
I don't see how this thing actually compiles.
I don't, I haven't seen his issue ticket yet. I was going by, I was sharing the Zulip, which actually, in the Zulip, it actually has the error message. No, it isn't.
I'm,
I mean, it doesn't compile.
Yeah, well.
But so I don't see how to compile.
Yeah, what you're saying is that they shouldn't be able to call a get item, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Although I don't know if that's.
And it may not be able to. So we just might be reporting a poor error.
I was going to say, yeah, so it looks like an error issue.
If you change this such that fun get item takes a second parameter, D, which is this arrow list item, and it returns a this list item, and then you pass in get item, the default list item constructor, everything works fine.
Can you drop the code onto the issue for what works?
Yeah. Another option is, I'll bet, if we just make it a ref get item.
Is that going to work?
Yep, that works fine as well. Both of those work. So it's just, there's no...
Oh, that's interesting.
Bug here, there is an unhelpful error message, which... is a bug, I suppose. A different kind of bug, but definitely still a bug.
So wait, why are we saying they should be unable to call get item?
Because the return type is not true. That's not going to be the return type of myMap.getOrElse.
Right, it's this dash, or sorry, this arrow.
Yeah, this arrow list item is the return type of map dot. MyMap.getOrElse. So it's just the wrong return type.
I added the return type.
And then you won't be able to populate that with list item, the list item constructor, because that doesn't give you a this arrow, because the this arrow might be immutable because it's a fun box. So then what you'll need to do is pass in the default item thing to get item as a D or whatever default name you want to get, whatever name, as a this arrow list item. Pass that to getOrElse and construct it when you call getItem, everything works fine. Or similarly, you can make getItem fun ref instead of fun box and everything will work fine.
Right.
Hey, I like it when I remember things about type systems.
Put all that in comments. Yeah. And I'm going to add label bug, and then after your stuff, if you don't put it in your comment, I'll add a thing that says, you know, that the error message here is not particularly helpful for determining what the actual problem is, and that could be addressed.
Okay. Love it when a plan comes together. Not going to play some AT music for me, Sean?
No, I'm having an old moment, and I can't remember what his name was. Hannibal, right?
Yeah.
Is that his name?
Yes.
Hannibal, right. Okay. Yes. Okay, Hannibal.
All right. Issue 3567 double consume error.
You're adding that stuff, right, Sylvan?
Yeah, I'm adding it right now.
Okay. Ooh, double consume error.
Wow. What is?
Yeah. You shouldn't ever need to consume anything that's not a reference name. So this code is, rather than presenting an error to you, telling you that, it is having an assertion failure that the compiler is running into an edge case where it's not able to tell you that you can't put a consume in front of something that's not a name because it's hitting some kind of assertion failure before it or after it was supposed to tell you that. The generate multi-dot name, I think that's related to the code that Dippin added for assignment. What was it for, Sean? Sometimes safely assigning when consuming.
Oh, that stuff was beautiful. Yeah.
There's an edge case in that code.
Which number?
Uh,
3567. Thank you.
Yeah, you're right. That would be in the stuff that Dippin added. Yep.
Whoa. That shouldn't work. Why does that compile?
It doesn't compile. That's a compile time assertion.
It also doesn't give a nice error message.
Definitely doesn't.
That's
assertion zero is not a nice compiler message.
I know. I mean, I think my comment pretty much sums it up. This should be an error message rather than an assertion failure.
Yeah.
I think something in the code from Dippin's PR was 3304.
Yeah. If you know the PR where this was probably introduced, if you could drop that in, that would be cool, Joe.
Yeah, I'm just trying to confirm it was, but yeah, I think it was probably the same. It's not that this was like, it's just probably an edge case that Dippin's code is not handling, or assuming, right? I think his code is probably assuming that you're not going to run into any consumes that are like this.
Okay. So we'll add a message about that.
I'm adding a message, yeah.
Great, okay. 3557, change type of enroot to ambient off. Looks like the only change here was somebody made a comment celebrating this exists. Although I see this person is from Kansas City. There's another Kansas City Pony user.
Who is this person?
Meet up.
Yeah, DC Casey. have to have the cool. Kansas City.
Which
pony meetup?
Hi, Dan. If you're listening to this.
Yeah.
Oh, so Dan's from Kansas City. Interesting. Yeah, I know that.
Kansas City metropolitan area. Okay. And then one more.
Oh, speaking of which, Joe, I sent you a crazy email. Did you get the crazy email I sent you?
I'll check presently.
It was like a couple of weeks ago.
That's no surprise that I haven't looked at my email since then.
No, I haven't even checked my work email since then, so I can't say anything. But it was about an approach to ambient, not just ambient authority, to any kind of auth and being able to combine them and have a nice API for it.
Okay, cool.
Yes, I told him to send it to you, so you should look at it.
Yeah, I want to validate that behavior. Okay, so
I'm trying to play matchmaker to get these to get the two people who are not good at like conversing in an async fashion sometimes on these things to be conversing. Y'all got to help me out a little.
That was so awesome. Every part of that was awesome.
Okay.
In fact, why don't I, instead of just being a Git and saying these things, I'm going to post this on the link right here, and so that everyone on the Zoom chat can look at it.
Oh, wonderful.
Which is there. And then if we have time, I'm happy to talk about it.
Andy, I have a question related to the sync thing, right? Mm-hmm. The sync one. So let's say there are all these corral things that we don't get to today, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do they just kind of drop off and get lost, or do we have a way of like...
So I was thinking about that, and I guess maybe after, if people want to talk about that for a minute, talk about what to do with things that don't get to in the meeting. Does anybody want to talk about that for a minute, or should we talk about that next time? One thing that I was thinking of doing that I realized then our settings don't allow was to put check marks, basically to edit this post, comment, whatever, in Zulip and put check marks next to the things that we get to. And that way, the next week we can go back and look and see what we got to and what we didn't. And then kind of combine whatever shows up in the list that we would generate next week with whatever we didn't get to last week.
I have an idea, Andy.
Yeah.
What if we changed the way this worked a little, right? Because this is done at a point of time. What if we every X amount of time, right, we had something which ran and was able to see what is new or has had activity, right, on any of the repos that we're concerned about and tag them as needing attention. And then when we actually generated an agenda for this meeting, we would just be looking for the things with those tags. And when we're done with them, we remove that tag.
Yeah, we can try it. We can try something like that. Just thinking through.
So you're saying we need to add another needs discussion during sync time.
See, I was trying to figure out a diplomatic way of saying that, but yes.
I mean, it seems useful.
Well, we have a needs. Yes, I think it's different than a needs the needs discussion tag. Right?
Yeah. Well, this would be more like discuss it sync, but.
I think
there's
sure.
A subtle difference. I'm not trying to be a dick by saying that.
No, I don't think it's actually needs discussion during sync. I think a lot of what happens in sync is the last line really for triaging an issue, right?
Yeah.
And this is basically, this is really a thing which goes through and finds issues which have updates, et cetera, anything else. I don't know. It's somehow kind of triage related. I think right now it would really be, hey, this needs discussion during sync, but I think it could get more refined over the course of time.
Okay. Let me think about that a little bit, because right now the only flag that you really have to control things with the script is, or with this program, is the date flag, which can just tell it to look further and further back. But if you,
yeah,
if you go back, then you get the false positives of the things you already covered. So, let me think if there are any rules that we might want to apply to.
So at least with issues when they're created, right? Anytime an issue is created or updated, it would be easy to add a GitHub action that runs mm-hmm. and puts whatever the label is that we want. However, that's impossible to do with pull requests, because you have to have credentials in order to, change a label on the repo, yeah. right? Okay, sure. And anytime somebody opens a PR from a forked repo, it rightly doesn't give them access to your secrets, which would be the credentials there, because otherwise they could print out as, in something yep. in their PR and get your credentials, which is what brought to mind for me running periodically, right? Something that runs periodically for it, because then it could be, it literally even could be that there's a repo. We could whatever it is that does this, right? We could set it up as a thing which gets run by GitHub, from some repo, every hour or whatever, and goes and runs through the list of everything that needs to be done and updates anything that doesn't have the labels, for example. And then the labels are there, and then the only thing that has to happen before the meeting is a thing which goes through and finds everything across the repos that have the given label.
Yeah, I think that there's something to be said for that. And then I guess, if it gets closed, then if it gets closed before we've dealt with it, then we remove the label.
We could certainly have a thing where. It would be fairly easy to write a thing which could be installed across our repos where when a PR gets closed or an issue gets closed to clean up the labels that are on it.
Yeah, I mean that seems like a good idea. And honestly, if we did something like that, that cuts out a lot of the hoops that you have to jump through. I mean, to generate the list of things for discussion. So. I'd be all in favor of trying that. Okay, let's talk a little bit more about that after this, Sean, and some ideas of what to do there. Cool. Okay, anything else anybody wants to talk about before we sign off?
I'll just mention, I looked at the example that Sylvan shared. Sorry, I didn't read my email before, but I like it. I think we should make it a standard thing. It's kind of like Promise's standard API for auth. Sort of a linked list kind of fun way. It's cool.
Did anyone else have a chance to look at that link?
Yeah, I've been looking at it.
Cool. So the chance of me actually writing up an RFC, as much as I'd like to, is probably low. If someone else wants to do that, that's awesome on the basis of that code. Otherwise, I'll get to it when I can. We'll take it from there.
So the implications of this on ambient auth for end.root is interesting, right?
It can become an offset.
Yeah, I was going to say, it would become, or it would just be, end.root would be auth, and you don't know what it is until you check. And it could be, this kind of solves the problem that we were bemoaning as why end.root as being less than ambient auth wasn't actually useful. This kind of would make it useful to have it be sometimes less than ambient auth in a useful way.
Yeah, because it can really provide exactly the set of capabilities you want the derivative program to derive.
Do you remember what my response was when you showed it to me, Sylvan?
I think you said write an RFC.
I think what I said was, oh, that's wicked cool. You should send that to Joe and you should do an RFC for that.
Yeah.
All three. But you forgot the first part, which is, oh, that's wicked cool.
That's true.
The other thing I like about it is that it does not limit auth to be only a primitive.
That's right.
You can have a stateful auth like file paths or... as I think we should probably have in the TCP library, some specific port numbers if you want to limit it to that, for example.
I think we'd have to look at what the API is over that, but it's totally fine, right? Once you derive something that's specific to that library, you would then have that API. So actually, that's really easy. I don't know why I said we'd have to look at the API. It would be really easy.
Yeah, it already works. Is you unwrap the specific one for your library that you care about,
and then you're done.
And maybe you have a TCP generic auth or a you know, TCP specific port off that you check for, you know, one before the other, and you unwrap it according to your own type and what's happening.
Yep, and it works perfectly. Makes sense.
And for primitives, you still should be fairly static in terms of once LLVM optimizations get rid of all these apply methods, it should just be a, you know, a link to.
Oh, yeah, it won't change that at all.
So CodeGen should still be nice and cost-free.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
All right.
So what did we leave the end.root as ambient off RFC? Did that one already get merged in?
No, it's Matthias is working on it, and he has a number of PRs he has to open against other things. I put the do not merge on it because it would break a bunch of libraries. There's also pony patterns that need to be updated and other things before it can be merged. Well, that need to be ready, right?
Okay, all so the yeah, PRs the need to be ready. Accepted, but it hasn't been merged yet. Okay.
Yeah, he did the Pony C part. I did like three of the libraries or something that needed to be updated, and then I left the rest of the stuff that needs to be done to him to do.
Yeah, so if we want to consider this path, you know, I wouldn't want to break end.root twice code for everyone.
Right. Yeah, that would suck. Maybe mention that on the PR so that he doesn't continue doing work towards it necessarily without right now until that's discussed a bit more.
Yeah. I think that this change from Sylvan would be a change for anyone who is, we wouldn't just do end.root as ambient auth, unwrap it with apply.
Actually, you could do end.root as ambient auth. It works fine. That's part of the design. Because end.root
But you'd be is an instance of auth. If somebody gave you ambient auth plus something else, even though you technically had ambient auth.
It wouldn't work. Good point.
It would work-ish.
Yeah, that's a good point. It would work-ish.
Not that it makes sense for somebody to give you ambient auth plus something else, but if someone were to do it, it would like break your code for no reason.
Yeah, that's exactly what I didn't consider.
I will add a comment to that pull request.
Okay. Anything else? All right, I will take that as a no. Thank you all for showing up today. Have a good week, and we will all listen again next week. Take care.